I've been at the newspaper only a matter of days and immediately noticed the guy sitting across from me participating in some peculiar phone conversations. The calls always end the same. Him cut off in mid-sentence as he carefully sets the receiver down, sometimes deflated, but other times more carefree. Like getting hung up on happens so often, it's lost its sting. His name is Craig, and he's the wire editor at the paper. The calls all involve someone named Honeybun. I presume Honeybun to be his wife, although I can't for the life of me understand, one, why he would voluntarily and unironically call his wife Honeybun, or two, why he uses his desk phone in this fashion in a quiet office with at least a dozen colleagues eavesdropping. When Craig mentions his wife to coworkers, she's Barb. On the phone, she's Honeybun. Always Honeybun, invoking the name as if he gets a monetary bonus each time it's used. As in, "Oh, hi, Honeybun. Did you have a fun time, Honeybun? Honeybun, I told you. I left them in the top cabinet." With our office phones, one long ring means an internal call. Two short rings is someone on the outside. Craig's phone rings from the outside approximately 10 to 25 times per night, or as I would categorize it, incessantly. Craig is tall and 50-ish, with hair the colors of a gloomy day. For a typical shift, he wears a pink cotton short-sleeve shirt, a summer clearance find at Penney's, nearly white khakis, and gleaming white sneakers someone might wear while riding a three-speed in a Dentures commercial. His glasses, whose lenses have a subtle tint to them, peaked in style 18 years earlier. His voice is attentive and kind. Even during stressful deadline crunches, I never see Craig lose his cool or raise his voice. Upon arriving each day, he greets me with a delicate, "Oh, hi, Dave." Delighted and almost surprised that I have returned for another shift. He is gentle and jovial, often sharing interesting tidbits from the Associated Press newswire, quizmaster style. Okay. Which country is the world's number one exporter of drinking straws? He will inquire what I did on my weekend, or what I do in my free time. You're from Colorado, right? Did you ever get up to, is it Winter Park? Barb's parents used to stay at a lodge up there. I bet they get a lot of snow during the winter. Here, he pauses in thought, formulating in his head a year's worth of snowfall in Winter Park. On paper, he's everything you could ask from a coworker who's 20 years older. Deft with pleasantries, making the 40 hours you sit at your desk per week, at the very least, bearable. Then the phone rings. Craig Howell. Hi, Honeybun. I listen and wonder, how could a guy who seems so constitutionally merry be the same guy who gets hung up on 7 times a night? This is my fifth job in 5 states in 8 years. That's how the newspaper business works. You start at a small paper, stay for a couple years, then move to a bigger one. Living without the foundation of the family and friends of my hometown promotes a sense of detachment. Being young and ambitious and at work more often than not, my coworkers have become my family. Age, gender, family status, it doesn't matter. The colleagues of the moment fill my life. Nearly all my greatest friends began as strangers that fate had placed in the adjoining cubicle. I've cruised to Mexico with one colleague turned pal and been a groomsman for another. When I was first seated next to Craig, I figured we might eventually get to the point of sharing a coffee break or grabbing lunch. Or who knows, I might eventually tag along with him and his wife for a day or two of skiing in Vermont. But over time, we stay mere colleagues, acquaintances. As the months pass, I begin to notice patterns in the daily onslaught, as 70% of Craig's conversations consist of him pleading his innocence. No, Honeybun. No, I didn't. No, that's not. I develop a number of theories and observations. One. The topic of conversation is almost irrelevant because anything Craig says seems to be taken as the opposite of what he means. In his defense, he has two responses. A. No. This sturdy rebuttal, sandwiched between barrages, is intended to mean, I am listening and am engaged in this disagreement, but I do not concur. B. No. These two no's are spoken rapidly back to back, usually a high-pitched force of desperation as he senses the misunderstanding beginning to unravel beyond immediate repair. Craig's other strategy is pure repetition. If his intent is to drive home a point, he uses a word or string of words over and over, like a talking teddy bear whose chest has been stepped on one too many times. In one epic contest of will and determination, Craig utters the phrase, "I didn't touch it," an astonishing 16 times. 2. Regardless of subject matter, any call may end without notice. There's rarely the standard, "Okay, bye," or "Talk to you later," although he occasionally employs the antiquated "ta-ta." Rather, the talking stops and Craig hangs up the phone. To the casual listener, it might seem that Honeybun had been on a cell phone and driven into a tunnel without warning. I guess when you talk to the same person twice an hour, there's no sense in creating any notion of finality. But usually the end is more abrupt. Craig gets cut off mid-sentence. He might pause, sigh, or clear his throat before gingerly replacing the receiver. Sometimes a seemingly pleasant conversation undergoes an instant about-face, with Craig pleading not to be misread, misunderstood, misinterpreted. Then comes the same hang-up as before. Because calls can end abruptly and are dialed and answered in varying degrees of hostility, it is possible for some conversations to consist only of one sentence. Craig Howell. No, we didn't talk about what you would have for din- Click. Phone r rings again almost immediately. Craig Howell. No, we didn't. We didn't. No, we didn't. We didn't talk about it. I was thinking of yesterday. 5 second pause. Click. It would be unfair to say that Craig and Honeybun only argue. Because the combative calls are so common, the pleasant conversations begin to get my attention. Sometimes they're short and playful. Craig Howell. Oh, really? Oh, huh. Simultaneously replacing receiver. Other times, they become a marathon of quirkiness. Craig Howell. You did right, Honeybun. Yeah. He's incapable of. He's. He. He's. Yeah. What do you mean over the barrel? What do you mean over the barrel? Yeah. So. It's just him playing Santa Claus. Keep in mind, I'm aware of the issues. I'm aware of the issues. I'm aware of the issues. I think Chris. Yeah. Yeah. They take the kid apart and ask him. If the mother says it's fine. No. I'm saying legally they're not going to hold him. No, I think you're right. And they just don't think these things through. Click. When I think I'm heading towards some sort of solution to the Honeybun mystery, something even more bizarre occurs. Craig's phone rings. He puts the receiver to his ear and pauses for about 3 seconds, and then, with a soft and most gentle, lovey-dovey sing-song, says, "Is that you, Honeybun? Is that you?" I can't imagine what might prompt, "Is that you?" Is it faint moaning or sobbing? Has her voice dropped 2 octaves and become unrecognizable? Caught in a sneezing fit? Speaking in tongues? Perhaps it's dead silence. Regardless, are there really enough people phoning Craig and disguising their identities to warrant, "Is that you, Honeybun?" Of course it's Honeybun. Everyone in the goddamn building knows it's Honeybun. As always, I never avert my gaze from my computer screen. To ask him anything at our desk would be to put him on stage in our quiet office. So I carry on like normal, like I don't hear what I hear, as if his conversations are appropriate in a professional environment, as if all married couples communicate so brokenly. What's astonishing, nay, inspiring, is that Craig never seems adversely affected by the harshest of phone activity. I see him apparently get browbeaten one moment, hang up the phone, and seconds later ask someone a snappy, relevant, work-related question. A moment later, he's on the phone again, using the gentle honey bun voice, a tone generally saved for pets, infants, and angst-ridden teens. And in our office, where the loudest sounds are a faint, faraway TV and fingers tapping keyboards, Craig's shenanigans dominate. No, no. Tell me about it, honey bun. Tell me about it, honey bun. Tell me about it, honey bun. Hang up. Dials back immediately. Tell me about it. Hang up. Waits approximately 35 seconds. Dials back. Hi, honey bun. No, no. That's not true. No, no. That's not true, honey bun. No, no. Hangs up. Dials phone immediately. Then speaks under breath for about 45 seconds. Hangs up abruptly, clearing throat at same time. The themes of Craig's conversation rarely move beyond this. I am left no alternative than to make assumptions about the relationship, which seems to be built around a series of misunderstandings, all the fault of Craig, who apparently lives waist-deep in a pond of ineptitude, idiocy, and all-around bumbling and bungling of everyday tasks. I'm always in her dreams screwing something up, Craig says to me. Just the biggest imbecile, the biggest screw-up that you could imagine. While relaying this story, Craig never turns off his grin. She'll wake up the next day and say, "You made me so angry last night." If I weren't such a calm person, I would leap over the one-foot wall separating the tops of our desks, grab a handful of his collar, put my nose 2 inches from his, and scream, "Why does your wife hate you? And why are you still smiling?" Here are a few things I know about Craig's life beyond our workplace. 1. Craig married Honeybun in his early 30s. He's in his early 50s now. Before newspapers, Craig worked as a lawyer. Not the flashy trial lawyer you see on TV, but a financial lawyer, the kind that works in a bank amidst blue and gray walls and carpet and a feeble setup of coffee and hard candy for customers waiting to inquire about free checking. The kind of lawyer I imagine occasionally being asked by wandering customers where the withdrawal slips are kept. 2. Craig once fashioned a mustache in his early days of his marriage. I know this because the day I shaved my beard, he was the only coworker to notice. He followed with a story about his own facial hair and the day he shaved it on a whim. He recalls Honeybun's response. "Honeybun, did you get a haircut?" Craig. "No, I shaved my mustache." Honeybun. "I never liked that thing anyway." He recalls this story with a head-shaking, "Ain't she a character?" grin. With a nervous half-smile, I shake my head too, then uncomfortably scratch the back of my neck. 3. Craig and Barb do not have children, together or otherwise. 4. In the place of children, Craig and Barb have a boat. The boat is Barb's deal, but Craig, its primary caretaker, summoned every weekend during warm months to sail it, sleep on it, or bear the burden of supervising its repair and maintenance. The first thing I know about the boat, they paid too much for it. Craig says, "It was out of our price range, but of course the agent said, just take a look, and of course Barb fell in love with it. It was the first one we looked at." He sighs. "It was the same way with our house." The second thing I know about the boat, it's sucking the life out of Craig, literally. At the cafeteria, he has a sandwich prepared sans lunch meat, just cheese and lettuce, to save the dollar. He blames the boat. Despite his just-below-the-surface contempt, Craig never directly insults the boat. He's more passive-aggressive when it comes to the sea, opting for heavy sighs during and after discussing anything boat-related. At times his feelings emerge and he verbalizes his displeasure for the boat, the sea, and the time it swallows from his life. "It took us 21 hours to sail to Nantucket," he tells me. "I could have driven halfway across the United States in 21 hours." He sighs and speaks as if he was criticizing someone else's trip. "It's like if you had a car that had a radio that didn't work, so there was nothing to do but sit there, and its top speed was 7 miles per hour, and you had to drive it up to the White Mountains." Still spoken calmly and powerlessly, it is the closest he comes to confronting this thing that occupies his life, as if he were hoping I would examine the subtleties and nuance of his voice and language, calling me to look closer and closer until I see a miniature Craig, waving his arms, reflecting a mirror into the sky, hoping someone, someday, might save him. It occurs to me that getting Craig to talk deeper about his marriage might bring out some answers to the honeybun question. I think of ways I could meet Craig and Honeybun outside of work. I keep my ears alert for dining plans, which might create the opportunity to accidentally bump into him at a restaurant. I consider boldly inviting myself to dinner, or showing so much interest in sailing that he feels obligated to have me out on the boat. There, I could give the relationship a fair hearing, free from the limitations of the one-sided phone call. Maybe Honeybun is right. Maybe Craig is the scorn-worthy, bumbling buffoon that Honeybun makes him out to be. A new person is hired and sits adjacent to Craig twice a week. During an after-hours conversation, she becomes curious about some of her new coworkers. I bring up Craig, and Honeybun, and the phone calls. I plead with her. You have to ask him. You must demand to know all about these conversations. Like a director, I spell out the scene. You're young. You're innocent. You're curious. You don't know that these calls happen twice an hour. It's all new. She refuses. But I plead with her because I should have pleaded with Craig when I still could. I should have jumped in when I couldn't have known any better, when I could have chalked up my faux pas on the ignorance of being the new guy. I could have waited for him to set the phone down and chime in, "A little old fight with the old lady, huh? The old ball and chain? Ha ha! Yes, sir," as he would detect this odd closeness with his new, carefree colleague, obliged to let me in on his secrets. I continue to look for opportunities. I pass him in the break room at dinner time, perfect for some blunt questioning, beyond the earshot of anyone else. But anything I think of seems obtrusive. "So, Craig, what's the deal with that crazy wife of yours?" If I were a better liar, perhaps it could be like we have something in common. "Man, I didn't get all the laundry done this weekend, and boy, did my old lady let me have it." Instead, I smell the air in exaggerated fashion and try to guess what he brought for dinner. Chili? No, lamb stew. From a series of calls, I pieced together bits here and there and determined Honeybun will be manning a booth at one of the region's largest boat shows to be held at the convention center downtown. I consider showing up, hoping for a chance run-in. I might wear my polo that features the newspaper's masthead prominently, hoping it might spur some conversation with strangers and that one of those strangers is her. But if I went to the boat show, what would I be looking for? From the picture in my head, it would be a scowling, stringy, gray-haired lady with a weathered face, creased from years of sun and wind and unhappiness, and she'd be belligerent and confrontational, launching irrational accusations at passers-by. I wonder how someone could be committed to a person like this, enduring a marriage for years, belittled and held back with contempt. I imagine it happens slowly, never from day one, never overnight. One end of the relationship slowly gains power and control as the other end gets smaller and quieter, settling into a helpless existence, having forgotten what life is like outside the darkened room. From an outsider's perspective, it seems so clear. Leave. Nothing is worth a life of regret and unhappiness. You have no kids. You deserve better. Leave. I sit next to him for 40 hours a week, spending more time in his company than with any other person. But I don't know him. Hearing one side of his phone calls doesn't give me the right to judge. He may be perfectly happy, enduring harsh phone calls because the payoff is so great. Perhaps Honeybun is insanely attractive and 20 years younger, independently wealthy with a British accent. Perhaps she apologizes profusely when he gets home and makes up for the phone calls with exquisite home-cooked meals and vibrant, mind-twisting sex. Or perhaps she suffers from something beyond the scope of the phone calls, something that wasn't there when they were newlyweds. Brave, valiant, and compassionate, he's refused to give up on her, committed to hearing only the voice he fell in love with. Maybe this is the woman I should be looking for at the boat show. Today, I know nothing is stopping me. I could call across the half wall and demand the truth about Honeybun, the other side of his phone calls and his life. I could know everything. As much as my curiosity haunts me, the truth might haunt me more. For Craig's sake, I cling to the idea that key information has somehow eluded me, that their relationship would make sense if only I could hear the other side. When I'm honest, I sense that Craig is exactly who I think he is. Years of verbal and emotional abuse have made him hollow. Crushed beyond the point of accepting his predicament, he's forgotten that he has a predicament. I've decided I don't want to know, at least not for sure. If he were a friend of mine, I'd listen, I'd plead. I'd tell him to demand his freedom, his life. But he's just a colleague, and I just happen to sit by him. For 2 years, I've avoided investigating the intrigue of Craig and Honeybun, prompting me to doubt that I will ever solve the mystery. The window of overt curiosity has passed. I know that he knows that I can hear every word, and it's as if we've made an unspoken agreement that his phone calls don't exist.